Going to continue the hour right now by talking politics with the 2022 midterm election just around the corner, only a couple months away. Where do things stand in the national race for control of the U.S. House and Senate? Things actually seem to be moving in different directions as far as those two houses go. And for more on that, we're joined by Tom Jensen, the director of public policy polling based out of Raleigh. PublicPolicyPolling.com is their website, and you can find more info and analysis on Twitter as well, at PPP Polls. Tom, good morning. How are you?
Hey, Aaron. Good to be with you.
So let's start by talking about the race for U.S. Senate. Now, we've been talking a lot in the last couple of years just about the extent to which it's a midterm election coming up. Historically, this is always bad for the president's party, and polls were reflecting that pretty strongly until the last couple of months, and specifically in the race for control of the U.S. Senate, seems to be moving in the other direction toward Democrats and away from Republicans. What's the state of things right now?
Yeah, I've said several times in our conversations over the last couple of years that I thought Republicans would end up with a 54-46 majority in the Senate after this election, that Democratic senators in Arizona, Georgia, Nevada, and New Hampshire would likely lose their races, and that it wasn't likely in a midterm election that Democrats were actually going to pick up any Republican-held seats. But if the election was today, which unfortunately for Democrats is not, but if it was today, I actually think Democrats would expand their majority to definitely 51-49 and possibly even up to 52 or 53 seats. And the number one reason that's happened is not even so much that the political climate has improved for Democrats. It's improved a little bit, but it's still a good political climate for Republicans. But Republicans in these key Senate seats have just nominated bad candidates in race after race after race. And there's one person who gets most of the quote unquote credit for them nominating these bad candidates, which is Donald Trump. In Georgia and Arizona, because of Trump's endorsements, in both races, somebody has been nominated who's never run for office before, and who doesn't, in both races, doesn't seem to be very on top of the issues. In Nevada, Republicans nominated the losing candidate for governor, not even in a close race, from 2018, so not exactly somebody with a winning record. And then in Pennsylvania, of course, we have Dr. Oz. That's a Republican-held seat where the Democrats are up by 10 right now because Dr. Oz is so unpopular, but he got through because of Trump's endorsement. And then here in North Carolina, if you'd asked me 6 months ago, I would have said I was pretty sure that Republicans would end up winning the Senate race by 6 to 8 points. But really, the polls are pretty mixed. Sometimes Sherry Beasley's up by a little. Sometimes Ted Budd's up by a little. Pat McCrory polled better than Ted Budd. But again, Trump's endorsement helped get Ted Budd through the primary.
How about the U.S. House?
The House, I'm still pretty confident, is going to go Republican. And there's a few different reasons for that. But the biggest one is that for the House, the candidates don't matter. For the Senate, you know, the candidates get enough attention that a bad candidate can be the difference between winning a race by a couple points or losing a race by a couple points. The House really pretty much just gets determined by what the overall national atmospherics are, and the overall national atmospherics are still better for Republicans than they are for Democrats. It seems like President Biden's approval rating is ticking up a little bit, but it's still only ticking up nationally to about 40%. And a lot of the key sort of swing congressional districts is still going to be in the 30s, that sort of thing. So that that gets to a point where, you know, even if Republicans maybe in some cases don't put forth as strong of candidates, it's not going to make as much of a difference because people at the House level are more likely just to vote on their general mood, which is something that benefits the Republicans. And then the other big thing that works to the Republicans' benefit is gerrymandering and how district lines have changed for this new decade. One really good example, Tennessee had its primary last week, and Tennessee is a state that was already sort of gerrymandered. There were only two Democratic members of the House. And obviously, Tennessee is a Republican state, but it's not a 80% Republican state. that you would sort of expect to be the case with an 8-2 or whatever it is, House delegation. And in redistricting this year, Tennessee Republicans managed to take that from 2 Democrats down to 1 Democrat. There was actually a former UNC student body president, Jim Cooper, who had been the Democratic congressman for Nashville for a long time. And Republicans were able to chop up his district into enough pieces that now Nashville is going to be represented by like 4 or 5 different Republicans because they spread out the Democratic vote among all those districts. And there's going to be a single Democratic member of Congress from Memphis. So Republicans are benefiting. I mean, Tennessee is just one example, but Republicans are benefiting from that sort of dynamic across the board to help in their House prospects.
Speaking with Tom Jensen, Public Policy Polling. So a couple of things that you mentioned in mind. You mentioned the Republicans are likely to take back the House, but to what extent are we likely to see like a big shift in the overall numbers? Like, how many seats do you expect right now Republicans to pick up in the House?
I think that they'll probably pick up 20 to 30 seats at this point, which if we'd been, I'm sure we did say 3 months ago that at earlier points, it seemed more like it would be 40 to 50 seats. And the abortion issue definitely, as we've discussed some already, has reshaped this picture. Since we last talked, there was a special election for the House in Minnesota this last week, mm-hmm. in a district that Donald Trump won by 10 points. And the Republicans only won that special election by 3 points. So significantly underperformed Trump's performance last time. And we should pat ourselves on the back about that Kansas abortion referendum. I think that people generally expected it to pass. And we had a discussion 2 weeks ago about why we thought it would probably fail. And it did fail by a pretty significant margin in a state that voted for Donald Trump by 14 points. So there was lots of sort of theoretical discussion in the weeks after the Supreme Court's abortion decision came out about what sort of impact that might have on the political landscape. Over the last couple of weeks, we've seen some real world evidence that sort of shifted the equation. So I don't think it shifted the equation enough probably for Democrats to actually keep control of the House, but I do think that they're going to lose a lot less seats than they would have if we'd been in the exact same political climate that we were earlier in the year.
And between now and November, what items in the news are you looking to that might affect that outcome one way or the other?
I think the biggest thing is just going to be how people are feeling about economic issues that really directly affect them. Certainly a big part of why Democrats and Biden were doing so poorly earlier in the year was $5 gas prices. I think gas prices coming down has been something that's been very helpful for Democratic prospects. If that trend continues, that'll be good news. And then inflation, I do think, has been sort of a defining issue of this political cycle. And it seems like there's some improvement on that front as well. I worry from a Democratic perspective that the improvement is sort of more something that you can see in the statistics, but that people might not feel at an individual level the way that you can clearly feel the gas prices coming down at an individual level. So I think that's something to watch out for, is does inflation continue to come down, and do people actually truly feel like inflation is coming down in their own lives? And I think if those two things happen, that's going to be pretty good news for Democratic prospects, because that basically was the argument against Democrats that Republicans were planning to put forth for this election. And things on those fronts may not be as good as people want, but they're at least better than they were in June.
Speaking with Tom Jensen, Public Policy Polling, and as we wrap up, bringing it back to North Carolina, you've already talked about the Senate race with Sherry Beasley and Ted Budd. How about the U.S. House race? What are those close districts that we're looking at in North Carolina, and how do you expect those to shake out?
Yeah, in earlier conversations, I've said that I did not actually think the 13th district, where Wiley Nickel and Bo Hines are running against each other in sort of the Wake County suburbs, was going to be competitive. I thought that was something Republicans would end up winning pretty easily. I now do feel like that should be a pretty 50-50 sort of race. That's the kind of place that I think has gone from being maybe off the board to right in the middle of the board as this political climate has shifted in the last few months. And then the other race that was very much potentially competitive was the first district race between Don Davis and Sandy Smith. And I think with the way that things have shifted over the last 2 months, that it's becoming less likely that that race will be competitive. That may just go Democratic by a relatively decent margin, just like it has historically. So I think that this shift that we've had has remade the U.S. House picture for North Carolina to where the 13th district is, I think, now the real battleground, where earlier this year I felt like the first district would be.
PublicPolicyPolling.com is the website. You can find more news and analysis on Twitter at PPP Polls. Tom Jensen, as always, thank you so much.
Thanks, Aaron. Take care.